Hi, this is Kevin Conroy, and you're listening to the GeekCast Radio Network.
You've just jumped inside the pull bag. Join TFG1 Mike and the rest of the comic crew here at the GCRN as they make their great escape into comics. From DC, Marvel, and Image to IDW, Boom Studios, and Zenoscope, we have everything right here. We cover things like Transformers, He-Man, superheroes, TMNT, and Radiant Black. Yeah, we have all that and so much more. It's all inside the pull bag here on the GeekCast Radio Network. So, without further ado, it's time to talk about the comics we're reading right now, here inside the pull bag.
Hello and welcome to the pull bag. This is episode 533. This is the pull bag. It's episode 533, and I don't know what the hell just happened there, but I'm, of course, TFG and Mike. Joining me this time for Comic Origins is John M. Wilson. Hello, sir.
Hello, Mike. How are you?
I could complain, but it doesn't help, sadly. So I'm okay. How are you?
I am making it. We're recording on Sunday, so there's a whole work week ahead of me. I'm not really loving that aspect of life, but, you know, we're gonna push on through.
Yeah, push on through to the other side. Oh, boy. And John and I have only ever actually done one other podcast before when we jumped inside the Rod Pod with another John over on Married with Comics, watching cartoons, whatever they're doing now. They do a whole bunch of stuff over there. But yeah, so we're here. Comic Origins, as always, 30 questions all about reading comics. Did you grow up reading comics? At what age do you first remember reading or noticing comics?
So I know that we had some random comics as a kid. I don't know exactly when those happened, but my earliest memories, solid memories of reading comics are in the late 1970s, Lancer published those three paperback books that collected the first 20 issues of Amazing Spider-Man. They did this for some other series as well, but I had all three volumes of Spider-Man. I'm pretty sure I got them when I was six, and I had the chicken pox, although that may just be because I've told a story that way so many times that that's just the way it is now. And I read all three of those 50 times if I read them once. Amazing Fantasy 15, 1 through 7 in the first volume, 8 through, I don't know, 13 or 14 in the second volume, and then on through 20 in the third volume. They were my primer on comics and on Spider-Man, Steve Ditko at his finest. And they're basically what inspired my love of comics for the rest of my life. And then when I was around 11 is when I went to my first comic shop. My dad took me to a shop called Treasure Isles in Denton, Texas. Doesn't exist anymore. And we looked at, gosh, first thing I went to look for was the latest issue of Amazing Spider-Man, and I was gobsmacked that we had jumped from 20 all the way to 341.
Yeah.
And a lot of stuff had happened in between there. And I read comics for the next couple of years. I remember when Maximum Carnage was coming out, I remember missing a chapter and not really caring and deciding that maybe I was done.
Right.
And so after that, it was just a handful of things like Spider-Man 2099 and the Marvel's miniseries until basically all of my comics consumption was looking at covers of the Walden books and the Bean Altons and the Borders all the way up until 2008 when I started getting comics again. So as a kid, that's basically it.
Yeah, very cool. So you'd say it was your dad that got you into it kind of thing?
Yeah, pretty sure my dad got me those three volumes, and then he took me to the comic shop. He liked comics as a kid, too, and I tried to share with him my current comics, but as a kid, I don't think I realized that, you know, adult dad did not have the same love for comics that kid me had, and that right. was just weird. I didn't understand it, but yeah.
Yeah. So when you were a kid, which characters were your favorites?
Spider-Man, obviously. Lots of Spider-Man. My brother read Batman and Daredevil and Captain America, so I read those two. We had the collections of the Mirage Turtles series, those early Eastman and Laird issues before they handed the creative control over to whoever wanted to do an issue that month.
Right.
Yeah, I'd have to say Spider-Man was by far the top. I did try other stuff. I read some Ravage 29 that was coming out. I had the Superman Archives. So even though my love for Superman didn't really blossom until later, I did have some passing interest in him as a kid. I read The Death, and it was his Armageddon 2001 annual that led me into an interest in getting all of the Armageddon 2001 crossover series, which I did. I got all of them except for the Acronym Legion issue, which I did not read until 20 years later. So yeah, as a kid, by far, it was Spider-Man.
Very cool, very cool. All right, the age-old question, gun to your head, DC or Marvel?
Both. Why do we have to have tribalism?
For me, it's never been about either of the companies. It's been about whatever characters.
Right.
So, like, right. Terry McGinnis, Batman Beyond, Bruce Wayne, Batman, as long as it's sort of Kevin Conroy adjacent, Iron Man, whatever kind of thing, Spider-Man, obviously. But yeah, I mean, some people are, you know, either or.
I feel that historically, and this has changed somewhat over the years, but, you know, speaking in the long term, Marvel has been better about presenting their stories as a unified narrative, and DC has been better about telling individual stories about their characters. And I like that.
Yeah.
But both of those are different approaches. They both have their values, pros and cons. So I do like Marvel's, you know, that you can start at the Fantastic Four number one and the Incredible Hulk number one and all those early heroes and just start reading through, and you're going to get an ongoing tapestry. I like that about Marvel. But that is not at all to say that I don't love, you know, a lot of the stuff that happened at DC. I love the multiversal aspects of DC, the legacy characters. Even though every time a reboot happens, it's annoying, I do like that we have different versions of our different characters that have their own flavors and twists to the rules and stuff.
Yeah.
It's kind of like Elseworlds, but instead of being what ifs, they're like, okay, this is the next version now.
Yep.
And there's some merit to that. It's not everyone's cup of tea, but I kind of like it.
Yeah. That's the one thing about DC that I mean, we started this podcast a decade ago, 2 years after they did started New 52.
Mm-hmm.
And my biggest problem with both companies before I started the show was, oh my God, 70 plus years of stuff that I need to get. No. So, you know, that's why I was never really like so negative about I'm kind of negative about how many relaunches Disney. Wow. DC has done since 2011. The last
right.
They've done like 6 or 7 relaunches, which I understand. They want that number one issue money and whatever else. But overall, like you're saying, what I love about that is that we get various writers whom I end up following, like Kyle Higgins. He did a run on Batman Beyond. He did an amazing story. Dan Jurgens did his run. We're currently in the middle of Colin Kelly and Jackson Lansing doing their runs. So I like that I don't necessarily have to read the previous writers, creators' runs.
Mm-hmm.
Like they all, specifically to Terry and Batman Beyond, it's all just kind of, hey, let's just do a new take or do a new tale on it. And it, because it's Batman of the future. You don't know what the hell's going to happen in 2049 or, oh, wow, we're really getting close. We get past Batman Beyond future. I don't know what the future
is. The future is not as future as it used to be.
No, it's very much at an end.
The future's end, you might say. Yeah. And New 52 happened just a couple of years after I started getting back into comics. So I was primed and ready. You know, whenever I wasn't young biologically, but I was young in my comics fandom. When you're a young comics fan, the big exciting things are big and exciting. Mm-hmm. So whenever they were relaunching everything, I bought every single DC issue for months and months and months.
Yeah.
I was reading the entire line for at least a year, and eventually time just caught up with me and I had other things I had to do. but getting into the nitty-gritty nuances of the continuity and what was true and what was no longer true for Superman, that was just that's just my brain likes that sort of thing. And yeah. So I was really, really into it. And of course, I held a podcast, New 52 Adventures with Superman, which, you know, we go in detail up until the end of the Grant Morrison Action Comics run. And then I did a few more episodes after that. But yeah.
Very cool. Very cool. Yeah. And with Marvel, it just like. They've done reboots as well, but they haven't. It's been a major thing when Marvel did the first. I think what was they went from Marvel then to Marvel now or what it was right around.
But they those are creative directions. Those yeah. aren't changing the continuity. They're just, yeah. hey, big push to get everyone on board with our titles. We're doing lots of exciting things, yep. which DC has also done, but not to the extent. And because so many of their relaunches are continuity shifts.
Yeah.
And Marvel, while there might be details of their history that they sweep under the rug and ignore, they, for the most part, make it feel like whatever you were reading last year mm-hmm. happened in the comics. It happened to the characters. We're just, this is the next year for them.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, it's a way for them to go after that new number one money without doing what DC always does, which is just consistently reboot. So I remember when we hit 700 for ASM, it was like, oh, okay. And we don't have to mind. Well, we actually do have a 701 to 800 probably, because I do remember issue 800 too. But like at that time when issue 700 was going to happen, it was like, okay, this is it. Next time you see them, it's going to be a number. It's going to be a number one. I'm like, oh, okay. Sure.
Yeah, I have to say that although I fully and totally understand the marketing and editorial reasons for them, and I get that, mm-hmm. I do not like the constant new number ones because it just makes so right now in my read through missions,
mm-hmm.
I'm either in the 60s or the 90s, depending on what series you're talking about from my various read throughs.
Right.
And I'm dreading getting to post 2006 because the number ones come every couple of years.
Yep.
And just I'll have to trust that people on the internet have cataloged all of this dutifully for me so that I can find it all.
Yeah. I think also it's not just, and I say it as kind of a joke, but it is true. They are going after like the new number one issue money, where it's not just us comic book fans or, you know, fanboys and, you know, they want the general public. They want people who aren't comic book fans to be able to get attached to it and whatever mm-hmm. else. But it's also a change in creative teams. Like when 700 is the end of Dan Slott's run.
Mm-hmm.
And then who was it? I forget who took over after Dan did.
In an era where number ones are a thing,
yeah. yes,
the new creative team deserves their time in the spotlight. So yeah. whenever just pulling names out of the air, Abnett or Lansing or Lemire or Bendis or anyone takes over a title, sure, they're just as worthy of a new number one as the last guy was.
Yeah.
It's just from an indexing, cataloging, completism, oh, yeah. trying to keep track of everything point of view. Yep. We're on volume 27, it seems like, of these things.
That's the other thing I could never understand. I understand going from issue 700 going back to issue 1, but that issue 700 is the end of, let's say, volume 27. This new number 1 is the start. I never got the volume. I can understand ending at 700 and then starting a new number 1, but you put whatever overall volume in front. I'm like, oh, my God, I just
well, I think the volume is just the count of which new number one this is.
Right. Yeah.
And it started back whenever there was X-Men number one and Superman number one again.
Yeah.
Whenever those happened, those were, I think, the first notable volume twos.
Yeah.
And then it wasn't until Heroes Reborn.
Right.
Marvel has specifically said once Heroes Reborn happened, the floodgates were opened on number ones. And it was just a matter of time before every single title in their lineup eventually got rebooted. Daredevil and X-Men held out for the longest, but they eventually got rebooted as well.
Yeah, crazy. What other publishers do you enjoy reading?
Valiant. I'm a die-hard apologist for Valiant. I wasn't there in the 90s when they were happening. I first learned about them whenever they relaunched in 2012, maybe. And I've since gone back and read a lot of the 90s Valiant, but oh my gosh. those are some solid comics. I want to do a Valiant Comics podcast, but I don't want to do it alone. And I want somebody who knows the material better than I do to do it with. I'm currently in my second read through of the Valiant line from the 90s. And it's just some of the things I like about them is they're taking the superpowers concept and genre and not necessarily doing superhero stories with them.
Right.
They're doing other kinds of stories. So yeah. Costumes are not a big deal, even though a lot of their characters certainly have a visual look. And fighting a bad guy each issue is still a steady trope. But they're doing a lot of different kinds of stuff with them. And in the early 90s, whenever they were first starting out for those first couple of years, every issue had date and timestamps. And they worked. Like, you could take the various series and line them up by date and time. And although only rarely made references to each other, the references to each other worked. And they did the big Unity crossover, which I'm just starting my reread of, which brought all of the various lines together into a big story. And then they went their separate ways again. And it was good stuff. So Valiant is there. Of course, I did all the pouches for a couple of years. So 90s Image is also my thing. I don't think I'm as into it as I used to be. But I was reading, when I went to the comic shop, Eric Larson was doing Spider-Man.
Right.
When I went to the comic shop, that look was the current thing. So it's kind of in my blood. And so I did all the pouches and Image Comics podcast for a couple of years. And it's probably of all the different series I've done in the past, my most likely to be revived podcast. And so, Spawn and Savage Dragon. I'm not super big on Image's superheroes. I mean, they're okay. And I like, I find merits in them where I can for the podcast, but it's more like the Savage Dragon and Spawn and Max and Bode. And I haven't read their Turtles series yet, but I'm looking forward to the Turtles. Oh, there's another one I'm really big on is the Ninja Turtles and Transformers. I'm actually in the process of getting together a launch for a podcast with a friend of mine named Lane. And we're going to be talking about the IDW series for the Ninja Turtles and the Transformers. And that's going to be lots of fun.
Well, if you need someone to talk to about that, my buddy Joe and I have covered every single... I tell this story on every podcast, folks, so if you're hearing the sound of my voice, just fast forward a couple of minutes. When I was starting out the show and I wanted to figure... Like, I was already kind of doing Transformers from IDW and whatever else at the time back in 2013, but Joe was like, hey, you should check out the Turtles books, and I was like... Okay, maybe I will. And I'm thinking here, it's going to be your standard red, orange, blue, purple. I get the first issue and I read it and I just kind of like full stop. And I said, nope, 4 red bandanas. Nope, not happening. He's like, it's fine. Give it a chance. It's worth it. Here we are 10 years later. We've covered everything up to the point of issue 100. We have covered everything in the not relaunch, because it didn't relaunch. It just continued over into it. But issue 101 to 120, I think we've got that.
This will be our chance to do our journey through it.
Absolutely. I'm just saying, like, that initial episode that you guys do, if you wanted to have somebody on who's been there already and made the journey, I'm not trying to invite myself on, whatever. I'm just letting you know that I've been through the muck and the mud with these shellheads. I know what this
stuff is. Actually, the red masks, I kind of love, because that's where the concept started.
I know.
With the Mirage. Actually, that's a lie. Mirage started in black and white.
Yeah, but when they went color, it was red.
When they were colorized and collected, they went red. And then whenever they went to color, they were red.
So you have never read the IDW Turtles?
I'm reading them. Okay. I read a few issues a few years ago, but I'm reading it pretty much for the first time.
So like I said, I'm going, like, that was my initial thing was, oh my God, because for me, I was a cartoon kid. I was an 87 David Wise, you know, 80s cartoon turtles. That's why I like the four different colors. Yeah. I never got it. I never read. I was 7 years old when that cartoon premiered. So I still to this day have never read any of the original Eastman and Laird books. I eventually will at some point.
Yeah, they're worth it.
But when I was going through this first, and Joe was just like, nope, just full stop. Don't even worry about the, just don't even, it works. I'm like, okay. And I don't want to spoil it for you because I want you to have
the same thing that happens.
No. I'm not trying to say anything that happens. I'm just saying it's, for me, I was like, by the time I got to that point, I was like, okay. Yeah. That series, I'm surprised. I think Joe and I have done, in 10 years, we've done, well, somewhere close to 100 episodes covering that whole series that they're doing. And I think we've cried at least multiple times every episode because of things that they've done in that series. So that is so cool.
What's fun is reading the letters columns in the old Mirage comics.
Mm-hmm.
Because when that cartoon hit, the comics fans were not happy.
Yep.
And the editors were like, hey, if there's enough room for Dark Knight Returns and the Batman 66 TV show,
yeah,
exactly, then there's enough room for this comic and the Turtles cartoon. And it's for different audiences. So, you know, you don't have to like everything.
Yep.
But yeah.
Absolutely. So not into the Image superheroes at all. So you're not going to try any of the new stuff they're doing?
No, I like the Image superheroes. They're just not as big of a push for me.
Okay.
So the Wildcats, of the different things I've read, so Wildcats and Stormwatch and Youngblood, I like – okay, I'm not a creator slagger. I do not like to jump the bandwagon to slag off on creators, but the Liefeld stuff resonates with me the least.
Okay.
I do tend to enjoy, like, the Wildcats and the Stormwatch more. Stormwatch probably the most of the ones that I've read. And of course I've only read Image Comics up to like 1994. So okay, a lot of the stuff that like really started to click and make them really cool, I haven't gotten to yet. Like Alan Moore on, is it Mr. Majestic? I haven't gotten to that yet. Okay. Whenever Stormwatch starts introducing like the little girl who's like every century or whatever, right. I just haven't gotten to those stories yet, but I will.
So I'm talking about the current state, the like as of 2 years ago. So 2 years ago, Image Comics, along with Kyle Higgins, Marcel Acosta, and a bunch of other people, started what they're calling the Massive Verse. This is Radiant Black, Rogue Sun, Radiant Red, Radiant Pink, Radiant Yellow. It's all this. It's their new superhero universe. You have not read any of the current stuff,
correct? No, I, this is the first time I'm hearing anything about the I'm looking at the Wikipedia.
Really? Now. Oh, my God. I've not heard
anything about Massive Verse before.
So, yeah, you should check it out. Start with Radiant Black and then go from there. No, it's and the funny thing is about the Radiant Black stuff, we're actually, my buddy Joe and I convinced him to come on to Radiant Black with me because the previous hosts that I had for that aren't doing it anymore. And so we just released Volume 3's episode. So Volume 3 is issues 19 to 24. No, that's Volume 4. Yeah, Volume 3 is 13 to 18 of Radiant Black. It's super interesting. And one of the running gags for Radiant Black is we don't know what kind of comic. Like, it's a superhero comic, but it's a this comic. It's a that. It's just a running gag, like, we don't know what it is yet kind of thing. It's really good. That's all I'll say.
Good. Yeah, I'm looking at this now. I've not heard any of this. I will be very much looking forward to checking it out.
Yeah, it is so cool. The way they started off, and this was in the promotion, so this isn't a spoiler. Nathan was $38,000 in debt out in L.A. and no more jobs, no more acting, no more writing, no more this, no more that. So you know what he did? He moved home. it gets so good and so interesting, so fun. All right. Print or digital, which one, both, either or, and why not?
Space. and money, space and money. Space and money make me a digital fan a lot more than a print fan. I understand the desire people have to hold comics. And I do occasionally like the feeling of holding a comic and reading it, but also I can lay down with my iPad in the dark.
Yep.
I can download stuff. You know, you get the subscription services, you can pull down comics where the individual titles are free because you're paying the subscription. There are other ways to get comics, especially old comics. I in no way, shape, or form advocate getting copies of comics illegally when it costs somebody money.
Right.
Yeah. But old stuff, when it's not costing anybody money, I have no problem with that. And so, yeah, getting comics and just having them on my iPad and reading them easily, yes, I'm a digital person all the way through. I remember when Michael Bailey was talking on From Crisis to Crisis in the early years, 2009-ish, about, you know, or maybe it was on one of his Back to the Bins or Views from the Long Box episodes. He was talking about whenever reading comics on the tablet becomes easily accessible endeavor, he's going to be doing that. And within 2 years, I was reading comics on the iPad every day. And I still probably break out my iPad and read comics on it every single day.
Yeah, that's amazing. I think Kindle for Comics has gotten better now, but I've been a Comixology fan for the longest time, and it mm-hmm. sucks that Amazon bought them out. And even if Amazon still wanted to buy them out, they didn't have to change anything. They didn't, mm-hmm. if they wanted to Amazon brand it, and I say this every episode, so again, folks listening, sorry. All you had to do was put Amazon in front of Comixology. So amazon.comixology.com. You didn't have to change a damn thing, but they had to change a damn thing. But I still love, as long as my Comixology app still works, I still love using Comixology for digital, and I've been using them on my phone. The only reason why I'm saying this is because the Samsung S9 Ultra tablet was just announced. I'm thinking of saving up and buying. I don't know why I'm thinking of saving up and buying for this thing, only because I want Comixology on a larger screen, because the problem with the transition from Comixology to Kindle Comics is the guided view isn't exactly what it originally was, and even though I miss being able to sit here and, you know, in front of my 32-inch flat panel monitor and see comics, you know, the way they're meant to be seen digitally, kind of thing. But
the guided view, in my experience, very much depends upon whoever programmed that particular issue,
right?
Because there's somebody sitting in front of a screen determining where the panels are going to be,
yeah,
for the guided view,
yep,
and there is a certain art to that,
yeah,
that not everybody can do.
Right.
And I get frustrated doing guided view whenever I get through a page and realize there's a part of the page I never saw.
Right.
So right. I have to zoom out and like figure out what caption I missed. Yeah. I do like the iPad because of the larger screen. I can look at the entire page pretty easily, especially if I have my readers on. My glasses, and or I can pinch zoom into whatever part of it I want to do. I was a big fan of the Comic Zeal app for scans, but sadly with the latest iOS versions, there are problems with the Comic Zeal app, and I had to change apps. And there's a certain functionality that Comic Zeal had that was genius that no other app reader that I've been able to find has. So I'm currently reading what is the app that I'm using so I can, I think it's Chunky for Comics. But yeah, I've got the Sergeant Fury 70 open right now.
Cool. Who are some of your favorite comics writers and why?
Favorite writers. Favorite comics writers. Okay, so I think writers that I first realized as writers were why I liked the comics mm-hmm. were Neil Gaiman on The Sandman, Todd McFarlane on Spider-Man and Spawn. Later as an adult, Grant Morrison on the Action Comics run. And I want to go back and read some of his earlier DC stuff. I just haven't done it yet. J.M. DeMatteis is a man after my heart. And I got to tell him at Dragon Con. Was it last year? Yeah. Because his work on Spider-Man, his Child Within work, and the Vermin character, and the stuff he did with Harry Osborn and the Ghost of Norman, as an abused child reading my heart in other people's characters, in other person's characters, in other people's words, was very meaningful. So J.M. DeMatteis goes down in the books as one of the people that I not only enjoy, but like has meant a lot to me. Jerry Conway and Roy Thomas are probably really big for my Bronze Age, but Roy Thomas really depends upon which book he's writing and what years he's writing it, because early Avengers and X-Men Roy Thomas is a chore to get through. Okay. But like once you pass issue 50 on the Avengers, there's a turning point and it becomes really, really strong. And once Roy Thomas gets an artist on the X-Men that makes those images pop better and those stories resonate more visually, they become a much more interesting read. But the first series of X-Men, the 1 through 66 X-Men, I love them the way you love the child that is really hard to get along with.
Okay.
Because there's a lot of that series that is hard to get through. But there's also a lot of it that I really, really like.
Very cool, very cool. Anybody else you want to bring up?
Oh, yeah, it's kind of a cliche, but man, Ultimate Spider-Man was my jam for so long. So I have to say Bendis. I realize that as his career has gone on, he's fallen out of favor a lot with a lot of people. And I just don't know a lot of his newer stuff. But I do love me the first 10 years of Bendis's career. Scott Snyder on Batman. Greg Pak. Greg Pak is a modern writer that I do very much love. His work on Action was made me happy, and I've read other stuff by him that made me happy. Jean Luen Yang, or maybe Young, on New Superman and other stuff. Mm-hmm. New Superman is an underrated gem, and Jean Luen Yang does not get enough credit for doing some really cool stuff there. Anyways, yeah, I could go on, but I think that's a good list.
So let me ask you, this is a slight follow-up. I have not read it yet. I have it. I want to read it. I want to cover it on the show at some point. But since you say you like Snyder's Batman, what did you think of his Superman with Unchained?
I would tell you if I could remember what happened from one issue to the next.
Oh boy, it's that forgettable, huh?
Less the forgettability and more the 5 months of waiting between issues.
Well, yeah, I waited for the trade, so
I have not gone back and read the trade as a whole. I was doing my Superman New 52 podcast, and Unchained was kind of on the horizon whenever I stopped making episodes. So I was going to be rereading the whole, because I have the hardcover somewhere. Or I could just, you know, read the issues online altogether contiguously. But yeah. I remember liking it whenever it was starting, but they took 2 years to put out 9 issues.
It's only 9 issues?
Yeah.
I thought it was 10, but okay, no, you're right. I mean, I'm not saying you're not right, because I'm actually looking at the thing here where, wow, I did not, wow, I'm right there, Superman Unchained, 1-9. God.
So a year and a half, because it says June 13 to November 14, but it felt like 2 years. That's 9 issues. Should have been 9 months. It was 18.
Oh, my God. That's ridiculous. All right, folks. Coming later this year to the pull bag, John and I will be covering Superman Unchained.
I am down for it. Let me know.
Because, again, you know, we come from reading, you know, Snyder's relaunch of Batman. And my buddy Ryan and I covered most of Snyder's Batman run, and my buddy Steve and I, that's how the pullback started, was Steve showed me the cover to issue 13 of Batman. All right, you got you got me. I can hear Mark Hamill's voice coming out of that Joker face. Okay, I got it. Death of the Family. I'm there. And when they say, it's kind of like when, it's kind of like when Slott went from Spider-Man to Iron Man. He did that that Tony Stark Iron Man series for Marvel after the Spider-Man run he had. So for me, that's the same thing with Snyder, where you take a certain writer and you've had him on a certain character for so long, and then all of a sudden he's on this other, obviously, huge, big name, top three, you know, Holy Trinity, all that stuff character. It's like, I'd like to see what Scott has to say about Superman after all this Batman stuff. So sometime in the future, folks, that'll happen at some point or another.
I will definitely be down for that.
Awesome, awesome. What defines a good story to you?
Okay, so I've been on shows before where we rate stories. And I'm usually pretty easy to please. I need to be able to follow it. And if your visuals are making it hard for to follow the story, that's a big strike. So although I'm not a huge art critic and I'm not a huge art person, the art has to at least be readable for me to be able to enjoy the story. So the plot has to make sense. When I go back to write my synopsis for a podcast, if I can't figure out how we went from one place to another, that's a problem. And good stories are going to emotionally impact the characters. I want somebody in the story to be different at the end than they were at the beginning.
Okay.
And the problem with the traditional serialized superhero stories is that a lot of that has to be faked, because characters can't really change much over time. It's the illusion of change, but yeah. I want that illusion.
Yeah.
I am currently in the process of making a Babylon 5 podcast with Blaine Dowler that's going to be releasing in 2024, because we're doing Babylon 5 30 years later. And one of the huge tenets that he had for the episodes, whenever other writers would write them, because he wrote 90% of the episodes himself, J. Michael Straczynski did, is that at the end of the episode, at least one character had to be different, had to be changed by what happened.
Right.
And so that's important to me. But the difference between a 4-star comic and a 5-star comic for me is emotional impact.
Mm-hmm.
Did you make me feel something? Did you make me... if I'm telling this story to somebody else who understands the character, am I going to get choked up?
Mm-hmm.
Because I wear my emotions on my sleeve, so I get choked up pretty easily.
Yep.
But like, that's what's going to really, really sell it for me. Continuity, the changing of the costumes. Mm-hmm. I did not get hung up on that at all. That is fine. That is part of the game. Give me your rebooted continuities, but I need the stories to resonate with me. And the thing is that when people were slagging off on the New 52, I was enjoying Superman stories.
Uh-huh.
I was enjoying Supergirl stories. I was moderately enjoying Superboy stories. And so the fact that everything had been rebooted just didn't bother me, because I was having fun with the characters. Yes, things were different, but so what?
Yeah. I actually wanted to do with Bailey for years and years, about a decade ago, so obviously, but I wanted to cover a New 52 Supergirl with him, and I don't know what it was, but it's been so long that it hasn't really clicked with me, and I have all the trades, digitally, thankfully. I have all the trades.
Go ahead.
So I have them all, and I didn't realize it was not that this really, it should not matter to me, but how do you feel about men writers writing men, or men writers write like the whole like gender thing, as far as like, not saying men should only write men or anything. I'm not trying to be controversial here at all, but like, I had just gotten off of reading Margaret Scott writing a bunch of Transformers stuff, and I really enjoyed that. And I know Mike Johnson?
There were two Mikes. There were Mike Johnson and Michael. There were two Mikes.
Yeah. So it was one of them. And I had read some of his other stuff, and I started reading like the first trade, and I'm like, this doesn't. I got to go back and give it a second try, but yeah, that might be something else we do in the future. Who knows?
Yeah, it's not that men should only write men, but women should have the opportunity to write in general, and especially to write women.
100%.
So yeah, I can see what you're saying there. I think a lot of the conversation about that was in a different place in 2011. We were just starting to gain some awareness as a fandom and as an industry that, hey, there are a lot of voices that need to be heard as creators, and a lot of those changes were just starting to happen. The Supergirl costume, when it came out, I didn't mind it, but looking at it now and realizing just what's going on there, I do have some problems with it. But like I said, I'll move past the costume if your stories are interesting me. And I was enjoying the stories. Maybe I'll feel differently if I were to go back and read them now. What I did find disappointing is that the Mikes talked in interviews about having a 4-year story plan for Supergirl. Mm-hmm. And the one of the Mikes left after 18 months and the other left after 2 years. Whatever their 4-year plan for Supergirl was, it never got realized.
Michael Green and Mike Johnson.
Yes.
Mike Johnson was the one that I had read some other stuff that he had done. And I had just come off of reading, like I mentioned, Margaret Scott's run on like Windblade and some of the other female Transformers characters. And I was just like, I can't read Mike Johnson's again. I got to go back. I got to try it again. And I never shored up those plans with Michael Bailey to cover that anyways. So it doesn't really matter at this point. But it was just one of those things where it was a little weird to me, and you keep mentioning how the costume doesn't matter to you, and that's great. That's awesome. But let me ask you this. Nightwing blue or Nightwing red?
I will fall on the blue preference, but I won't read a Nightwing series because he's wearing red.
There you go.
You know, it's like him wearing red is not going to stop me from reading the comic, but I do. I mean, Nightwing, ever since he became Nightwing, he's always been blue themed. It's Superman's wears a blue costume with a red cape.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's Superman. And Nightwing has always been blue. So whenever he went red for a little while, whatevs. But I prefer him in blue.
Yeah, I grew, you know, we all grew up watching, most of us that are in superheroes and whatever else, and most of us that are geeks grew up watching DCAU, Batman, Superman, all that stuff. And I grew up with Nightwing Blue on TV with Lauren Lester voicing the character. And that is what I do love. However, it's not necessarily because of the fact that it's the red. It's again, this was my debut to Kyle Higgins, was New 52 Nightwing, and how much he loves the character and how much he loves the DCAU and how much he loves that version. So he was trying to make his version, not necessarily that, but like it's in that same, like every time I read one of Kyle's issues and and I'll put the clip in here somewhere. When we interviewed Lauren Lester back in 2013, I actually had him read a line of dialogue from one of Kyle's issues for New 52 because I think it was issue 19. Yeah, I know exactly what it was. It was issue 19. It was when he was going up against the Prankster. It was right as he was doing the Chicago arc. And like I said, I'll put the clip in here somewhere. But what he says is he says, I like s'mores as much as the next guy, but I'm all out of marshmallows. What do you say we get out of here for the night or something? He says something. But I had Lauren do that line for, and I have that clip, and I'm just like, this is why I love Nightwing Red so much, because I can hear, and I have never really read any of the Nightwing stuff other than Kyle's. I want to. I did start reading the Rebirth stuff who was the first? It wasn't, God, who was on the first part of Rebirth? I don't think it was
Tim Seeley.
Yeah, it was Seeley. And then it moved to somebody else. But I I actually have a whole plan. I have a whole document filled where I want to just spend 90 nights in Nightwing and just have it. It'd all have to be pre-recorded, but basically I want to release a comic episode of this show for 90 different nights for 90 nights of Nightwing at some point. And I want to start at the very beginning because I haven't read any of the old original stuff like the Chuck Dixon stuff and things like that. So, but yeah, I always, anytime anyone brings the costume up to me, I'm like, yeah, I grew up with the blue in the cartoons, but comically red is my favorite.
Mm-hmm.
Who knows that? I don't think that's going to change because that's my favorite. Like, I may enjoy some of the other Nightwing stuff, and I love the cover that they did for 78 of the current run or the whatever run, the rebirth run, where one of the covers of 78 is all of the various versions of him, including the Superman uniform version, like from Robin to this, and the red one's in there. So it's basically him climbing up the wall as all his various versions. So
yeah, I enjoyed that Nightwing series. They did the Return to Haley's Circus. They did the of course, the Death of the Family was a big thing then.
Yeah.
That issue 19 you were talking about, I thought it was really fun that DC did that issue 19 where every single comic that month had a What the Fuck Gatefold cover.
Yep.
That was just a fun. I mean, gimmicks, people can slag off on gimmicks, but also they can be really fun.
Yeah, absolutely. What does the story have to draw you in? So what's the thing that whatever the first issue is that you read that has to have for you to come back for the next issue?
Not be bored. Okay, so if I read your first issue and I close it,
mm-hmm.
and I can't think of who the people are and what the people did, I'm not going to care. So whenever I finish a first issue, I want to feel like I'm beginning to get to know the characters as people in the comic. Who they are, what their plight is for the story. I resonate with characters and the story that they're on. The principles of storytelling, I was going to say mechanics of storytelling, but mechanics are really part of it, are something that I think about a lot. And so I just, when you're starting out, I need to care about your people.
Right.
Because if I want to go on a, if you're going to ask me to go on a journey with them,
mm-hmm.
then in the very first scene that you give me, you have to make me care.
Yep.
And that's one of the difficult, when we were talking about Image Comics earlier, one of the difficulties I had with a lot of the superhero teams in Image Comics, and we're talking like, you know, 90s Image, for the most part, those characters are visual designs, power sets, and pun names.
Okay, right. Well, that's what the 90s were. I mean,
yeah, right.
Yeah.
But they're not people. And whenever I fell out of Spider-Man, it's because Maximum Carnage was a very plot-driven thing about villains going haywire. I wasn't resonating with any of the people anymore. The characters of Spider-Man that made me love Spider-Man, I wasn't resonating with the Spider-Man comics anymore. So I stopped reading. So if I'm doing a completism thing for a podcast, sure, I'll go through it. I'll talk about, and I'll pull out what I can and I'll enjoy what I can. But that's why I enjoy some of the other books Image did in those early years more than the superhero books.
Yeah, absolutely. Who are some of your favorite comics artists?
Eric Larson. See, the problem is I'm going to think about names and I'm going to completely forget about some of the stuff that's really left an impact on me. I'm going to pull out an early Superman artist that I really love. Let's go with Fred Ray. Let's go with, oh crap, the guy who went over and did Starman. Let's see if I can find a name real quick.
Kurt Swan.
Kurt Swan's okay. I'm thinking earlier, though. Jack Burnley. Jack Burnley is my favorite Golden Age artist. So Jack Burnley is fantastic. When I was in the 90s, Eric Larson and Todd McFarlane were there. I really like Ross Andrew. But in the modern comics, there are so many artists out there that I have really, really enjoyed, but I haven't really mentally cataloged their names. Yeah. And so I'm doing a huge disservice to the last 10 years of artists because I just can't think of their names. But also, to be fair, I don't read hardly any modern comics these days. All of my reading right now is in back issues. I haven't read a comic that was published post-1993 in years.
Oh, boy.
Well, except for podcasts, the Ninja Turtles and Transformers stuff.
Yeah, Transformers
I've been reading more of. Yeah. But for superheroes, yeah, it's been a minute. Oh, I do like me some Jim Lee. I know he's cliche, but I do like some Jim Lee. It's whatever he was designing the New 52 stuff. I was down for that. Yeah. But yeah, I love a lot of artists whose name are not occurring to me right now.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. All right. So since you mentioned that you don't really, outside of what you're doing for podcasting, you don't really read modern comics. Number one, I don't read comics unless I'm recording a podcast for them anymore. Like, I don't consume, and I'm going to have a Geekcast Radio episode about this, but the fact that we call everything nowadays content, no matter what that content is, whether it's a YouTube video, whether it's a television show, whether it's a movie, a comic, a video, like, it's all content now and everything else. But, like, all right, perfect example, okay? I'm not even there yet. I haven't even gotten there yet, but I bought, and this is specifically because of the special things that...
Johnny and Marie Severin, both of them. They're very different, but I love them both for different reasons. Johnny Severin brought a flavor to Sergeant Fury and the Nick Fury Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. series that I really loved, and Marie Severin has a great flair to her that was very much needed whenever she started doing comics. Anyways, go on.
So with Radiant Black, they have issue 10 and issue 24. Yes, issue 10 and issue 24. They were specifically Blacklight issues. So if you have a Blacklight flashlight, if you buy Radiant Black number 10, the single issue, and Radiant Black number 24, the single issue, you can read them under a Blacklight, and that is so freaking cool to me. And that's why sometimes I will have physical comics, but most of the time it is, like we already said, it is kind of digital all the time.
Does the Blacklight effect not carry over to the digital version?
No, it does not. It's specific Blacklight paper. I mean, you can see the colors. I mean, you just won't see the reaction to black. Yeah, no, I tried that. It didn't work.
Okay.
But yeah, I mean, the artists, man, like I can think of several, but I can't think of, like, I don't want to. Oh, man. So good. Do you have a favorite non-superhero title?
The Max and the Sandman.
Very cool. Very cool.
Those are easy answers. There's probably other stuff that I really like, but the Max and the Sandman will go. Oh, and Bone.
Bone. Okay.
Yeah.
What is your favorite run or story arc of a series? So the simplest example would be Night of Owls, Court of Owls. That's an arc in Snyder's series, or Death of the Family is an arc in his series. Like, what's your favorite for a story run?
There's so much that I have a hard time with questions like this whenever the potential
could be anything.
Yeah, so I'm on a Superman read through project. I've read every single Superman comic from 1938 into 1993. And whenever I got to the end of pre-crisis, I kind of celebrated on social media quite a bit. And there were a lot of people coming out of the woodwork because my tweet about finishing pre-crisis Superman got some attention. And people were like, what's the best parts? And I'm like, that's not how comics worked in pre-crisis. Yeah. You didn't have runs of comics. You had every single issue as an individual story. And whenever there's that many stories, it is impossible for my brain to pick a favorite. So, gosh. Favorite Spider-Man story.
Okay.
Okay, you know what? Instead of the way I'm going to answer that is the biggest eye-opening arc I had for my Superman read-through. So when I got to stuff that happened in Superman that I had no idea had happened, and I really enjoyed. Two things. One, the Supergirl backups in the Silver Age, whenever she went on like a 9-issue run of Superman was ready to introduce her to the world because originally Supergirl was his secret weapon, and she loses her powers. And for the next 9 issues, she's dealing with the fact that she no longer has powers. And during the course of that story, she gets adopted. Because previously she hadn't let herself be adopted because who would want to adopt a Supergirl? Or she felt like it was unfair to ask Earthling humans to take care of a Supergirl. So she gets adopted. That's when she becomes Linda Danvers. And then at the end of that story, she gets her powers back. And it culminates in the famous cover of Superman and Supergirl running through the ticker tape parade. Flying through the ticker tape parade.
Right.
But the fact that Supergirl was doing serialized storytelling in the early 60s, that was a big thing for me. And it was a solid story. The other really big eye-opening thing for Superman for me is in the 1970s when Clark Kent starts dating Lois Lane. Not Superman. Clark Kent and Lois Lane get together. And they're together for about a year of comics. It starts, if I remember correctly, it starts in the story arc before Superman 300, so like 296, and goes for a year. Where she, because, you know, historically, Lois Lane rejects Clark Kent. But the reality of that is that she doesn't nearly reject him as much as people say he does. She does. And in the Bronze Age, they're friends. And in the mid to late 70s, they fuck. So it was a very pleasant surprise that I wasn't expecting. I don't know if I can give you favorite stories, but yeah, those were eye-opening stories for me.
Very cool, very cool. What is one comic you can read over and over again, single issue or trade?
Ultimate Spider-Man. Cool. I've read through Ultimate Spider-Man probably 5 times. early Ditko Spider-Man. Post-Crisis Superman. The Jurgens, Ordway, Stern era, basically everything from after Byrne leaves until the Death and Return. To me, that multi-year run of Superman is one of the greatest achievements in comics. It's not every single issue is good, but as a whole, as a storytelling whole,
yeah,
fantastic,
cool.
Probably 70s, 80s X-Men too, because that's just solid work.
Yep. Are there any comics you avoid altogether? Like you go into the comic book shop and you see 7 of your favorites and you see 2 of the ones that you may not know that well and you kind of maybe read the back or read a blurb or something. You're like, yeah, that's not for me.
When I see people online celebrating comics that are all about exploiting the sexuality of women, okay. I'm like, why are you even reading that?
Right.
So if your cover is all about balloon boobs, I have no interest. Okay. At the same time, there are a couple of titles that got a following that I'm kind of morbidly interested in just for curiosity's sake. So like Terra, Witch of the Black Rose. I might read that someday just because I'm really curious why that was so popular. If your cover is Babelicious, it's you're fighting an uphill battle for me.
Okay. All right. Are there any comics in the past or currently that you wish you had not read them?
There were some issues of Lobo that I've read recently that I put that down. I was like, what did I just do?
Yeah.
And there are other issues of Lobo that I found very fun and enjoyable. So it's not the genre or the style overall.
It's the character. It's how the character is written or how the character is portrayed, right?
Yeah. Like Lobo's Back was a miniseries where he, you know, dies and like, you know, tears up the afterlife, and issues 2 and 3 of that, I was like, wow, that was definitely a comic that I read. I have rarely been angered at an issue. There's an issue of Amazing Spider-Man, the Amazing Spider-Man annual, I want to say 14, where it has Spider-Man and Doctor Strange fighting Doctor Doom and Dormammu. And I was all about that, except Spider-Man and Doctor Strange don't fight Doctor Doom and Dormammu. They barely, if I remember correctly, because it's been a while since I read it and got angry at it, but I believe the heroes barely meet. Doctor Strange is captive the entire time, and most of the stuff that Spider-Man does is to the henchmen of Doctor Strange and Dormammu, and just like everything that was promised on the cover didn't happen, and I closed the comic and I was like, wow, I was just lied to.
Yeah.
And I was angry at that comic, and I don't get angry at comics very often.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's just, it's one of those things where, like, people use this more, like, for movies or TV shows or whatever. God, I wish I had that hour and 20 minutes back after watching that craptastic whatever, insert whatever here kind of thing.
Avatar The Last Airbender live action. I have very rarely walked out of a movie theater upset. And Avatar The Last Airbender live action left me upset. Now, I had a friend I told that to, and he sat down and watched it. And he said it wasn't that bad. And he didn't know why I was reacting so strongly. So maybe it's just a context thing. But
maybe. Who knows?
But yeah.
How large or small is your physical comic book collection?
Physical?
Yes.
Probably 300 or less.
Really?
Yeah. Okay. It's not that big.
Cool. Well, all right. Well, since you threw that number,
I mean, it used to be bigger.
Yeah.
But things have happened over the years.
Right. Yeah. Well, you know, things happen. Comics got to get sold, all that stuff, or maybe tragedy happened. Hopefully not. But so you were on this. I've been trying to figure out where to put this, and I guess telling everyone that you have 300 comics, I guess this would be a perfect place to put this. You were on a mission to read as many comics as you can this year. You said something on social media. I think it was on Facebook the other day. I've read over 400 comics in the half the year. It's not even done yet. And I'm just like, okay, that was one of the main – besides I love getting anyone's origin stories for these things, but that was one of the main reasons why I wanted you on. I'm like, 400 comics in 6 months? Really?
So I occasionally like to keep track of how many comics I'm reading and or what comics I'm reading. And so, like, in 2018, I was doing this, and I tried to make it a thing to read 2018 comics in 2018. And I came about 200 shy of it. So this year, I've just been keeping track. And early in the year, Lane, who is going to be my – she already is, but we haven't published yet – my co-host on Ninjas and Bots, she was also counting her comics. Okay. So she's like, I think that's about how many I've read. And so we've kind of been neck and neck. We both have been in the 400s lately. So we post how, you know, in Facebook, if you put five images up, they'll show all five of them. Yep. If you put more than five up, they do the little plus thing.
Yep.
So every time I read five comics, I just put the five covers up there. Mm-hmm. I don't like flooding people's feed, and I'm not sure how many people that are friends with me on Facebook actually care about the comics. So I don't do this every year, but right. That's what I was doing this year. But yeah, I have read 400 odd comics in the last, you know, since the year started.
Wow.
And those are digital. Those are
right. Yeah.
The new ones are things that I've bought off of Comixology. The old ones are things that I found other ways.
Yep. Absolutely. What is the one comic you could never live without ever? So everybody is safe. All humans, pets, whatever, they've gotten out of the house, but the house is on fire and you have to run in and save one comic. What are you saving?
I don't think I would. I have the internet.
Okay,
but
that defeats most of the question.
I finally did get my own copy of Superman 75 recently, so that's kind of cool. Because I first read The Death of Superman through the trade that came out at the end of 92. I read it that Christmas, so I didn't have the issue Superman 75. I recently got my own copy of Superman 75 off the racks, and I've got a copy of the Max number one. And the Max is important to me because my brother Jim liked it. He died in 2016. So a lot of the things that he was into, that I was into because he was into, are precious to me. So if I had early issues of Sandman, they would be in my prize collection, because I only care what a Neil Gaiman and Sandman are because of my brother Jim. And so, yeah, I honestly don't have a lot of emotional attachment to my physical collection because everything is replaceable and so much of it is online. So I'm not one of those guys that has a huge connection to his comics collection as a physical entity. But those are the things that come to mind.
Very cool, very cool. What was the most money you ever spent on a comic or a comic item? Comic item could be anything you get at conventions or, you know, whatever.
I found the Transformers UK run. Mm-hmm. All complete 332 issues.
Uh-huh.
I spent $2,500.
Wow.
But I have the entire 332 issues of the Transformers from Marvel UK, and that is a fantastic thing to have and to read. It's a fantastic thing to read, but also to have. You know what? I'm saving that in a fire. I'm going back for that.
You'd have to use a shrink ray on it to get it out of the house, all 332 issues at once.
The box is very tightly packed and very heavy, but I can do it.
There you go. Was there ever a moment where you were completely done with comics? Like, you just walked away?
Yeah, after Maximum Carnage, I stopped collecting. So we bought a few lingering things, like I bought the next several issues of Spider-Man 2099, and we did buy Marvels when it came out. But other than that, I was done buying comics. I did not buy superhero comics again until 2008. Mm. When Dark Horse did a Star Wars comics relaunch, and for those who know Star Wars comics, I'm talking about the relaunch that involved Legacy and Rebellion. And the Knights of the Old Republic. So that I'm thinking that's around 2006. Mm-hmm. I was reading those, and that's when I got back into comics, was that Star Wars comics relaunch. And then after Iron Man came out, I started reading Marvel comics. And that's basically when my adult comics reading habit began. So from 1993 or 4 until 2006 or 8, I did not buy comics.
Wow.
But since then, I've been reading comics pretty much every day.
Absolutely. So what are you reading right now, and what do you think our listeners should check out?
What am I reading right now? What should listeners check out? Listeners should check out the Ninjas and Bots podcast at johnreadscomics.com, where Lane and I are talking every week about either an issue of the IDW series of Transformers or an IDW issue of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Things I'm reading right now, dude, I did a Facebook post a couple weeks ago about all the different reading projects I'm on. And that way thing was, once I wrote it all out, it was so huge. So I'm doing a Marvel Universe read through, and I'm in 1969. Eventually, very soon, I'll have read every single 1960s issue of Marvel Universe, which I think is pretty cool. I'm reading through Bronze Age Batgirl, Silver Age Flash and Green Lantern and Teen Titans. I'm reading through The Outsiders, listening to the Outcasters podcast. So that's something I recommend. I'm reading through Blue Devil, and Shag over at Once Upon a Geek has just started a semi-regular retrospective on Blue Devil. Blue Devil is fantastic 80s comics. I've already recommended Valiant. I'm reading a lot of 90s stuff. So the various Justice League tie-ins, G.I. Joe, Legion of Superheroes, Spider-Man 2099, I'm going to recommend every day and twice on Sunday. I'm reading the Superman Death and Return. I'll eventually speed back up on this, but since the death which I got to just after the 30th anniversary of the death.
Mm-hmm.
I've been reading the Superman comics as they came out 30 years later.
Oh, wow.
So I'm nearing the end of the Reign of the Superman series story, which it's August now. So he died mm-hmm. in November. He started fighting Doomsday in October, and the reign's not going to be fully done until the end of August.
Wow.
So that's basically a year that the Death and Return happened.
Yeah.
I've recently started reading the Milestone comics again from 90s. Highly recommend things like Icon and Static. Blood Syndicate is not one of my favorites, but I understand it resonates a lot more with the kinds of things that Dwayne McDuffie experienced as a kid. And yeah, IDW, Transformers, and Turtles, because that's what I'm podcasting about.
Very cool, very cool. Heroes, heroines, anti-heroes, and heroines or villains. What archetypes are your go-to reads?
I mean, I'm a superhero fan. To me, in my mind, I don't think that superheroines and superheroes are two different genres. But with the increased attention being paid to female superheroes, I am all about that. So whenever I saw the Flash movie recently and Supergirl was on there, she was great. She needed at least another half hour of screen time. Yeah. The Captain Marvel films, the fact that the Marvels is coming out later this year, or maybe it's early next year. I don't know. I'm really excited later to see that.
Year, it's November this year.
November this year. Fantastic. So, excited for that. So super heroines, we need to be showing a lot more love. I was surprised at how much I enjoyed Supergirl in the 1960s. And there have been times when I've wondered if I actually like Supergirl as a character more than Superman,
mm-hmm.
because I've enjoyed the stuff they've done with her so much.
Mm-hmm.
So she is pretty great. And, if I ever do another Spider-Man chronology podcast, the various Spider-Women and Spider-Girls will all be included. I know that Jennifer, Jessica Drew and Jennifer Carpenter, basically their connection to Spider-Man is through the name only.
Right.
But I feel like, you know, they're spiders, so they should be included.
Absolutely. Do you have a My Parents Got Rid of My Comics story?
Oh, you know what? One more thing to answer that question. Sorry. On Alpha Flight. Vindicator Guardian.
Uh-huh.
Heather is the Vindicator / Guardian. Mac is Heather's origin story.
Oh,
Mac is not the hero. Heather is the hero. That's my take. Anyways, go on.
Do you have a My Parents Got Rid of My Comics story?
Oh, so I've already mentioned the whole A word as an abused child. One of the things that my dad did whenever I blew off my scholastic responsibilities was to take my long box and make me walk with him out of the house and down to the dumpster.
Oh, no. Oof, that is abuse. Yikes.
So that was... and yeah, I had made some stupid decisions, but also I was a fucking child.
Yeah.
Children make stupid mistakes because they're children.
Mm-hmm.
And as a middle school teacher, soon to be high school teacher, that's one of the things that I'm not allowed to forget. And I feel like some teachers do forget this.
Yeah.
Children do stupid stuff all the time because guess what they are? They're children.
Yep. Absolutely.
And
absolutely.
School is not the most important thing in their lives. Anyways.
Well, it's one of them. It's not the most, but it is one of them.
They need to learn to give value to it. Yes, we all need to learn to give value to the things that make our lives happen, our jobs or whatever.
Yeah.
But 12-year-olds haven't gotten there yet.
No, they haven't. Not at all. What is one item from a comic book you'd love to have in the real world?
The mourning band for Superman's death.
Oh.
I would love to have that the armband that the black armband with the red shield on it. I'd love to have that.
There aren't replicas of that out there somewhere. They didn't do some sort of anniversary thing.
Actually, for the anniversary, I thought I had ordered the 30th anniversary special, because there were editions of the 30th anniversary special that came with the armband. I really thought I had ordered that. I was expecting it to come in the mail. And when it didn't, I went back through my emails and couldn't find the order. So I guess I thought about it.
Oh.
And didn't actually do it.
All right, folks, we are now entering the comic book fantasy funland. Yay. These are five questions that are all fictitious. Yeah, it's kind of like how Drew Carey always says on Whose Line, you know, the questions are made up and the answers don't matter anyway, or whatever he says kind of thing. If you could own any vehicle featured in a comic book, which would it be and why?
The Spider-Mobile, because why the hell not?
If you could live in any comic book world that you wanted, where would you live and why?
I want to live in Superboy Prime's world, where I am Clark.
Okay, there you go. Who would be your top three comic pals to join you and become a quartet?
Comic books characters to be my friends?
Yes.
Oh, dear. High school Peter Parker. Not adult Peter Parker, because high school Peter Parker was kind of a tool, and adult Peter Parker, I think, sometimes is more of a tool. Actually, flavor that with ultimate high school Peter Parker. Not amazing.
Okay. Okay.
Who else would be my friend? I'm 45 years old, but I hang around with school students so much that I think of friends in terms of school.
Right.
So I'm thinking about younger characters. Like, I think it'd be really cool to hang out with Kamala Khan. She seems like really fun. And you know what? On my hangout group / superhero team, Carol Danvers. She is somebody I think I would just respect the hell out of and want to help us.
Very cool, very cool. So the last 30 years have not happened in your life. If you could date any comics character, which one would it be?
Wow.
Well, I have to take Mindy out of the equation because there is no replacement for Mindy. So.
Well, okay, so hot redheads, we're going to go to Mary Jane then, right? So,
probably. Or Barbara.
So, yeah. You know what? 30 years ago, me didn't know Barbara very well, but modern day me does know Barbara pretty well. So yeah, if we're going pre-Mindy, if I can't have Mindy because we're earlier than Mindy, then we're going to say Barbara.
There you go. Well, I mean, because, you know, again, this is all fictional. It's all made up.
Yeah, it's all made up right here, right?
Whatever, but, you know. What is the holy grail of comic book artifacts in your opinion? A Batarang, the Matrix of Leadership, Kryptonite, Green Lantern Ring, etc.
Oh, if I were in the comics world, what would I want to have as like a artifact?
Yeah.
I want Superman's cape.
There you go. All right, folks, we are now
not one of Martha Kent's capes. Much love to post-crisis Martha Kent. No shade whatsoever on all the capes she made for Clark, but I want a Kryptonian indestructible cape. Or Golden Age, one he chemically treated so that it was indestructible.
I always thought it was that force field around his aura. It wasn't the actual fabric. It was some invisible force field that...
Yeah, that's how his costume stayed intact, but his capes were not skin tight. That's why his capes would get shredded, but his costume stayed intact.
But it makes sense if his, again, it's your choice. Fine, I'm not trying to take jokes away from you. All as I'm thinking is, oh, I miss Kay Callan. I miss that Martha Kent. I miss, oh, look, say what you will about the moron that played the character in the 90s, of how moronic that person is in real life nowadays, but...
Mm-hmm.
Lois and Clark, Martha and Jonathan were amazing.
They were pretty great. I'm actually going to be going back to that series soon because it's August and September 93 is when Lois and Clark started. So I'll be starting that soon with Mindy. She loved that show and I have not seen past the first season.
Really? Oh, man, you were in for a treat.
I mean, I saw the occasional episode growing up.
Yeah.
But, like, I haven't sat down and watched Lois and Clark past the first season.
Hmm. All right, we are now exiting the comic book fantasy fun land. Two more questions. If you could create any comic storyline, what would you want to create, and what characters would you want to create it with? So basically, whatever comic book company it is, they give you the keys to the kingdom, and they tell you that budget doesn't matter.
Mm. I am not a storyteller.
Okay.
Okay. This is going to be a complete, not just a different path, mm-hmm. but like we're in a different forest now.
Okay.
I would like to find a way to graphic novel / comic book adapt and make interesting the stories of the early Final Fantasy and or Zelda games.
Oh, wow.
If I could find a way to turn those, because the games themselves are not very plot driven, mm-hmm. but there's a, especially the Final Fantasy world of the original game has a lot of really cool ideas. And it has been adapted into a light novel in Japan that I still have yet to read.
Right.
But I did some I did some fan fiction adapting the first Final Fantasy game. And I would like to realize that project at some point in my in this fantasy world of
yeah, yeah. Belief. Yeah, absolutely. That would be awesome. What is the one piece of advice you would give the comics fandom in general?
Stop hating. Stop tribalizing.
Yep.
Stop fucking putting what used to be against what is.
Mm-hmm.
Go out there and try to find stuff that you enjoy. If you don't enjoy it, try something else. And if you're either A, have tried everything, or B, are tired of trying, then just enjoy what used to happen and let that be your zone.
Mm-hmm.
Stop hating on change. Because every single person out there who's buying comics right now, they're being made for that audience.
Yeah, absolutely. And
those are the people who are loving them.
Yep.
So yeah, my advice to comics audiences is stop being that guy, because that guy's really annoying.
Absolutely. All right, folks, we're going to go to a quick ad break here, some stuff and some ads and some other things, and we'll come back to close the show right after this.
Kid?
Yes?
Shut up.
Beyond the Night is the GCRN's latest review podcast. We are covering everything in the Knight Rider television universe, from the classic 80s TV series to the 1991 reunion film Team Knight Rider, and the 2008 relaunch series as well. So join TFG and Mike and Dion the Music Man as they go in-depth and Beyond the Night, only on Geekcast Radio Network. You can find Beyond the Night in iTunes and on www.geekcastradio.com.
Kit?
Yes, Michael?
Just keep driving.
Because the world needs another movie podcast.
The Geekcast Radio Network presents for your listening pleasure, The Cinema Geek.
Hosted by Amanda, Kevin, Matt, and Dan.
Each week we dive headfirst in the landscape of movies as we discuss movie news, play movie games,
go in-depth on reviews,
and even have a top 10 countdown or two.
Also, don't miss our director retrospective series, where we review noted directors' movies film by film.
Bottom line is, if you love movies and love podcasts, you need to experience The Cinema Geeks.
You can find us on iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, or geekcastradio.com.
Like science fiction? Of course you do, or you wouldn't be listening to the Geekcast Radio Network. Well, the Marku 42's Universe podcast is an award-winning sci-fi radio show that's been around for over 10 years. We cover everything from Doctor Who to the MCU to pop culture and everything in between. A new show drops on Tuesday mornings on the GCRN website and all of the major podcast platforms. So listen to the Marku 42's Universe podcast, from the universe and beyond.
Are you looking for a weekly dose of gaming news and retro? Then check out Off the Cuff, available Fridays on Geekcast Radio Network from the producers of XRG. New name, same.
Hey, welcome to the Last Comic Shop Podcast!
A comic book podcast that actually talks about comics.
Yep, each week we open the shop up and read and discuss a comic.
sometimes we pair that up with comic book movies or TV shows.
Or not. Lots of times, it's just comic books and sound effects.
Oh, yes. Definitely lots of sound effects.
So tune in on all the major podcasting platforms to The Last Comic Shop Podcast, or check out our library of evergreen shows at www.lastcomicshoppodcast.com.
We are back here inside the pull bag on Geekcast Radio. Mr. John Wilson, sir, what do you got coming up? What do you got going on in your podcasting stuff that you're doing?
Okay, so all of my podcasts that I've done are over at johnreadscomics.com. There's no H in John, or you can search John Reads Comics on your favorite podcatcher. Most of the shows have their own feed, but that's the mega feed. I need to get out the last several issues of Superman in Crisis. That is when I, as a Superman reader who had read every issue of Superman, I was hitting Crisis on Infinite Earths. And I wanted to memorialize that. So beginning with January of 1985's issues, I started podcasting every single issue of Superman-related stories from the beginning of Crisis on Infinite Earths up to the end of pre-Crisis Superman with Whatever Happened to the Man of Tomorrow. And because my brain is a really stupid place to live, I have several episodes of that have not yet come out, even though they're supposed to come out between April and June of this year. So those are coming out soon.
Okay.
Superman in Crisis is going – the episodes exist. I recorded them two years ago. I should have put them out there.
Yep.
So that's coming soon. Ninjas and Bots is my current podcast that is just now starting up. That's going to start releasing in September. And so Lane and I are going to alternate weeks between an issue of Transformers and an issue of Ninja Turtles from the IDW series from 2006, 2011, respectively. Mm-hmm. And we've recorded a lot of episodes of this other show, so it is happening, it is coming, but the release schedule is very specific. So Babylon 5, 30 years later, is slated to release in 2024. So next spring... If you have watched Babylon 5, or if you, it's one of those things that you just like feel like maybe you should watch because you're a sci-fi fan, you just haven't yet, here's an excuse to watch it. Whenever we started the podcast, I had never seen but a handful of episodes. Mm-hmm. Blaine has watched the whole series multiple times and has a lot of behind the scenes resources and stuff. So it's basically an intro cast. He is the knowledgeable one. I am the newbie. And we're going through Babylon 5 with each episode of coverage releasing 30 years after the episode that was released. Nice. So that's starting in 2024 because that's when the first proper season started. Those who know Babylon 5 know that the pilot film came out a whole entire year before the first season started. We didn't do that. We're just going to release we're going to release our pilot film coverage a week before episode one of season one.
Yeah. Absolutely.
So that's coming up down the road. Babylon 5, 30 years later, and Ninjas and Bots, and everything I've done over the last, 14 years as a podcaster is available on John Reads Comics. So go check that out.
Very cool, very cool. There will be a show link in the show notes on the website, folks, geekcastradio.com. So thank you for joining us here inside the pull bag. If you'd like to get in contact with us or leave feedback for the show, there are several ways to do so. Visit the website, geekcastradio.com, where you can listen to and comment on all of our content. Send us email to feedback@geekcastradio.com. Here are all the ways you can listen to us nowadays. Apple, Google Podcasts, leave us reviews, please. Spotify and any other podcatching client you choose to use. Follow us on X, because apparently Twitter is dead. At Geekcast Radio for the Network, it's at the pullbag for the show. I'm at TFG and Mike. Are you still on X?
Yes, I'm on Twitter at John Reads Comics. There is no H in X.
Well, there's no H in John either, so.
Yeah, that's a joke, Mike. That's a joke.
Become a fan on Facebook. Go to facebook.com/GeekcastRadioNetwork. You can also check out the pullbag over there as well. Join us next time when we'll have another Origins episode because just need to fill time and all that good stuff. So I will have somebody else walking through these 30 questions. For now, I am TFG and Mike with
John Wilson.
As always, make your greatest game into comics, and we will catch you next time.
You've just heard the latest episode of The Pullbag. the GCRN's first comic review and discussion podcast. There are several ways to get in touch with us and leave feedback for the show. You can visit the website, geekcastradio.com, where you can comment on the episode and all of our different podcasts. You can rate and leave a review for the show on iTunes. Be sure to leave us feedback. Become a fan of us on Facebook, facebook.com/thepullbag. Send us an email, feedback@geekcastradio.com. Follow us on Twitter @thepullbag and @geekcastradio. So until next time, make your great escape into comics and unleash the geek in you.
So how'd you do Batman's voice?
Precise muscle control.
Plus, I have a pretty good ear. Don't do that again.
Any minute now, Brainiac will explode. And guess what? You're going with him. No, Darkseid. To get off this rock, you'll have to go through me.
You really are a glutton for punishment. Time and again I've beaten you, humbled you. What makes you think today's outcome will be any different?
Because this time, I won't stop until you're just a greasy smear on my fist. Let's go.